When you hear the word exercise in the context of dairy cattle, what comes to mind? Outdoor access? Cows running laps around the track? What do we really mean by exercise for dairy cattle? What do we know about the impacts of offering exercise to dairy cattle, and what are the implications of trying to offer it for the modern-day dairy farmer? Perhaps more importantly, where are we headed when it comes to expectations for offering dairy cattle the opportunity to get more exercise? These are some of the key questions we're going to dig into today. Welcome back to Paths to On-Farm Excellence, where we discuss priority topics for Canadian dairy farmers. My name's Stephen Roach. I'm an epidemiologist with a passion for dairy cattle health and welfare. I did my master's and my PhD trying to understand how farmers, their staff, and their advisors can work together as a team to improve. Our goal here is really to provide farmers and their advisors with useful information that can be applied back home on the farm. And today we have something of a special episode for you. DFC's actually partnered with Lactalis Canada to discuss the concept of movement and exercise in dairy cattle, as well as to have a multi-stakeholder discussion on why this topic is so important, industry expectations today, and what the future holds. So, let's jump in. Okay, welcome everyone. Really excited to have the chance to sit down with each of you and do what I think is going to be a pretty interesting conversation here, really aimed at showcasing some of the latest research and talking through how that research has sort of percolated its way into industry policies and expectations when it comes to exercise and freedom of movement for dairy cattle. So I want to thank each of you for being here. And Clem, maybe we'll start with you if you want to just set things up for us, your role today and maybe a little bit of the context or the background as to why we're getting together here to chat.
Sounds great, Steve. So I'm Clem Nash. I am one of the program managers for DFC. My files are animal care and traceability. So I manage kind of all pieces of that on behalf of Dairy Farmers of Canada. And my background is that I have a PhD in epidemiology and animal welfare from the Ontario Vet College in Guelph. I'm based on like a kind of a hobby farm south of Ottawa near Kempville, Ontario. And I think what brings us here today really was essentially the publication of the revised code back in March. It brought forward quite a bit of discussion around freedom of movement and exercise for cattle and how to do so in our Canadian context. And so we thought in partnership with Lactalis, who has a lot of interest on supporting farmers in animal care and animal welfare, that we would come together and discuss that topic and pull some of the experts in that space together. So really excited to see how the discussion goes today, and I'll leave it at that.
Great. Olivier, why don't, on the other side of that collaboration, why don't you do a brief introduction and maybe talk about the importance from a Lactalis perspective?
Yeah. Hello, everyone. Hello, Stephen. I'm super glad to be here with such a distinguished guest. My name is Olivier Charbonneau, and I've been involved in the dairy sector since 2007, with the last 4 years at Lactalis Canada. You probably know our company. We process more than 2 billion liters in our 20 plants across the country, with iconic brands such as Lactancia, Balderson, Astro, Beatrice, Cracker Barrel, and many more. I'm quite involved in our ESG committee that works on environmental, social, and governance files. And I'm also a certified Cow Signals Master Trainer. And I happen to be the subject matter expert for the company on matters related to animal health and animal care. Something I want to mention is that Lactalis Canada is committed to producing healthy and nutritious dairy products from top quality milk. And that goes beyond simply the organoleptic characteristics of the milk. It's also how the milk is being produced. For us, it's of paramount importance that milk-producing cows are treated according to rigorous standards. And that's why we're involved in so many forums focusing on animal welfare. Taking part in initiatives aiming at disseminating scientific information, like today's podcast, is just one more opportunity to be proactive in that field. And we're proud to be co-sponsoring this podcast with Dairy Farmers of Canada. We are supportive of the development and adoption of scientifically informed practices to continuously improve animal health and welfare in this industry. And that's why we want to support producers the best we can so that we can reach our common objectives.
Well, it's really great to be able to, as you say, bring these two organizations together to talk about a particularly important topic for our industry. I want to introduce two more members of our panel, so to speak, today. First, Peter, maybe we will start with you. A man of many hats, will maybe break down some of your different roles here for our listeners and look to hear from with your different hats on as we go through our conversation today.
Yes, hello, Stephen. Glad to be here. Yeah, so I'm Peter Strebel, a dairy farmer south of Montreal in the province of Quebec, with my two sons on the farm, which are third generation out here. So I'm always also on the board for the Producteurs de Lait du Québec, and I also sit on the board for Dairy Farmers of Canada, and I have the pleasure to chair the Animal Care Technical Committee, or DFC, to establish standards that go into ProAction regarding animal welfare. Quite a few hats. So I have different opinions from different perspectives, but happy to be here.
So last but not least, let's go to you, Elsa, for a brief introduction, and then we will dig in.
I'm Elsa Basseur. I'm an associate professor at McGill University in the Animal Science Department. I'm also the co-chairholder of the newly created Research and Innovation Chair in Animal Welfare and Artificial Intelligence. I've been the co-chair of the scientific committee that supported the revision of the National Code of Practice for the care and handling of dairy cattle through the establishment of a literature review. And as such, I was also a committee member in the Development Code Committee.
Well, welcome again, everyone. Really excited to dig into our conversation today. And so I'll be our facilitator as we move forward and try and help keep things flowing. And so what I want to do first is, you know, I mentioned already our focus today is on exercise and dairy cattle, the impact, the importance, the expectations in the dairy industry today. But I think what might be the best place to start with is a bit of a definition. What do we really mean when we say exercise? We do throw this term around a fair amount. And of course, there could be quite a number of definitions there when we think about how this actually applies to dairy cattle. Elsa, I think you're really well positioned to help break this down for us. So what do we mean when we say exercise?
So I will like by explaining what is restriction of movement. So restriction of movement, it's basically a reality of most of the domestic animal with the idea that, for example, dairy cows are restraining their movement at the stall or in an indoor environment. While freedom of movement is, according to the public, maybe one of the most essential characteristic that should be provided to these animals, right? So when we talk about opportunity of movement or increasing movement opportunity, it's basically helping matching on-farm practices with consumer expectations.
I want to bring up another common piece that comes up when you do, well, when any of us talk about exercise or opportunity for movement in the context of the dairy industry. There's often an important question or sometimes an assumption regarding this topic around, does exercise simply mean access to the outdoors? And so in the context of the code, for example, or how research, and I know we're going to get into this, but how researchers have looked at opportunity for movement, does exercise or freedom of movement equate to outdoor access, or can we break that down a little bit further?
Sure. So, you know, in 2016, here at McGill, when we established the first chair, one of the ideas was trying to understand how we can improve specifically the TISL system that is predominant in Quebec, with the idea, can we increase movement opportunity in the system, so at the stall, and indeed it's possible. So we show, for example, that by increasing the length of the chain, you increase the demic space that's available to the cow. So, you know, she's actually move more. She make most of the use of what's available. If you increase the width of the stall, so for example, we did an experiment where we double the stall width. What we saw is like animals are using different type of resting posture that we are seeing, for example, when they're in a dry pack or when they're at pasture. So yes, increasing movement at the stall, for example, it's possible. However, research show that taking the cows out of the stall either during the dry period in the pen or having access to an exercise area, either inside or outside, further increase what we call the movement opportunity and the associated benefits. We've done a number of studies to try to understand basically exercise, so which is increasing the locomotor activity of the cows. You know, the same thing that we do. Humans have Fitbits and they try to count how many steps they're doing per day. So when we think about exercise, when we think about releasing the cows from their stall, for example, the idea was how can we promote an increased level of locomotor activity? And what we found is, for example, if you give cows access to an exercise area for 1 hour per day, we double the number of steps that the cow do. So yeah, they do step inside, but more, you know, the bigger the size, the longer you provide them with outdoor access, all of that has an impact of how many steps, so how much activity, locomotor activity the animal is doing.
So in summary, if I can, it sounds like ultimately when we say exercise, we're talking about the ability to locomote, the ability to get the animal moving and have freedom of opportunity to move. And then whether we're talking about a tie stall or a bedded pack or a free stall, there are opportunities to address or improve the amount of exercise or freedom of movement within those different systems. And of course, the approaches are varying, but it's exercise, the word, is not synonymous with outdoor access. We have many options to improve the opportunity to locomote beyond just getting them on pasture, for example. Is that fair to say?
I think I'll kind of tackle that summary question. What's really interesting about the research that ELSA is doing is it's helping us kind of inform decisions when it comes to adapting the requirements from the code. So just for a little bit of context for everybody. ProAction's animal care module, as I'm sure many listeners already know, is based on the code of practice. And that code was recently revised in March of 2023. The new code becomes, the requirements in the new code become live April of 2024. So we're in that kind of transition year. And then it's going to take probably another year or more for the Animal Care Technical Committee at DFC to determine how to implement those new requirements into the actual ProAction module. And that's what would be validated by validators during on-farm validations. I go into a lot more of those details on like the whole code and the code revision on the PodCow podcast, which maybe listeners have heard of or haven't heard of. It's a podcast that DFC sponsors. So you can go wherever you listen to podcasts to the PodCow and listen to that episode for more details on all of the code things. But today we're really focusing on a couple of the requirements that are in the revision, and I'll kind of list those out so we have the context. And so those requirements are for tie stalls that effective April 1st, 2027, cows must not be tethered continuously throughout their entire production cycle, so calving to calving. They must be provided sufficient regular opportunity for freedom of movement to promote good welfare. And newly built barns as of April 1st, 2024, must allow daily untethered freedom of movement and social interactions year round. So that's for older or weaned animals. For calves, cows may be tethered only if housed in hutches that provide access to an area outside of the hutch. So this is coming from the scientific report that was generated in preparation for the code review for the code committee. There was a clear emphasis that freedom of movement is important and beneficial to all ages and classes of animals, dairy animals specifically. And ELSA was a part of that process quite heavily. And what we're realizing is at the technical committee level, we're going to have to define what is sufficient, what is regular opportunity, all of those kinds of pieces, which right now don't have super clear definitions of the code, but we'll need clear definitions for when we implement in ProAction. And so with the time that we have, we're really utilizing the research that ELSA is doing to understand what sufficient would look like, what the benefits are. And so this is a great opportunity to kind of discuss what's been done and what's up and coming as well with ELSA. But that gives us a little context. So yeah, right now, the definitions don't specify in the code requirements that they have to be outside or on pasture. We're really focusing on opportunity for movement and untethered time.
Peter, Olivier, I'm interested in your perspectives as you listen to the conversation thus far. Maybe Peter, we can start with you. Can you talk to me a little bit about why these required elements are so important for the industry? Why do we need to continue to strive and through the code and through ProAction sort of push towards improved or increased freedom of movement?
Well, I think as farmers, I think we care about the well-being of our cows. We are in daily interaction with our animals. So whenever we can increase their comfort, I mean, it makes happy cows makes a happy farmer, I always say. It goes hand in hand. So when we have better, we've done lots in the past on our farm, and I've seen many farms across Canada also. So when you increase welfare for animals, that translates into calmer, more productive animals, but also improved health and longevity. So I think it's important to use knowledge and research to achieve our goals in this field.
Olivier, as you listen to Peter and as you think about this from a Lactalis perspective or from the other side of the coin as a processor more broadly, you know, tell us a little bit about your perspectives as you listen into this conversation, as you look to the code, as you look to some of these changes as it relates to exercise or more broadly, health and welfare.
Yeah, I'm totally aligned with what Peter and the previous speaker just said. In addition to that, Lactalis Canada is part of a bigger group, the group Lactalis, and we do have an animal welfare policy, and that policy is inspired from the five freedoms of the World Organization for Animal Health, the OIE. And one of the underlying principles is precisely that animals should have the possibility to express normal patterns of behaviors. So offering more opportunities for movement, more opportunity for exercise, this is really something that goes in the right direction.
So let's unpack a little bit more about what we know about this topic. We've talked and sort of set the stage in terms of what we mean by exercise. We've established what industry expectations and policies are going to be, at least to some level. As Clem said, that's still to be determined in terms of its implementation, but the code itself has outlined some reasonable expectations, some requirements, and some recommendations for industry in regards to a number of different practices, exercise and freedom of movement being one. Elsa, you've been one of the leaders in Canada on this topic. You've been closely involved in the code development process. Can you help unpack some of the science for us and what we're learning with respect to why this topic is so important and what we know about it today?
So the fact that the cows do more step, it's one thing. So visually, when cows get regular access outside of the stall, we see that she's stronger on her feet. But the reality, in order to develop recommendations that will eventually translate into new practices and adoptions on farm, it was important for us to try to understand what are the actually benefits and how can we measure, the benefit of increasing movement opportunity. So, for example, some of the things that we see visually, how can we measure it? So I will give one example. One important finding that we found at providing regular outdoor access, for example, for thistle cows, is improvement on leg and health, leg and hoof health. So what we found is yes, visually we can see that over a few weeks, the animal is actually stiff. She's able to walk again. And what we found was over 5 weeks, we're able to see an increase in the 1 point of locomotion score on a scale of 1 to 5. So it's pretty high. What we're able to find as well is that benefit lasts. So 8 weeks after we start to provide regular increased movement opportunity, the animal was still showing those type of benefits. So that's really reassuring to see that we can visually see it. As well, what we're doing right now is for maybe less frequency of exercise or for cows that do regular type of exercise, what are the maybe long-term benefits? So we're using different type of technology like the kinematics, like infrared thermography, to really try to understand maybe early detection, of improvement of change with the idea that how providing more movement will not just reduce lameness, but maybe enhance the overall, health of the animal. With the idea that, of course, early detections mean late lameness will mean, less cost on the farm. So that's one of the benefits. Another benefit that we've been particularly interested in looking at resonates with what Peter has said about you know, a happy cow, a happy farmer. So what we found when we provide regular access to an exercise area is we see you know, difference in the ability of handle the animal. So that's pretty important because in the process, the animal is dealing with more handling activities. So instead of being released just to move maybe for, you know, the calving pen or from one stall to the other, we talk about daily handling, and that handling has a direct impact. We see actually an improvement in the score in the relationship between the handler and the cows. For example, it was much more easier after 5 weeks of providing regular access to approach the cows and to put a halter, something that they actually don't really enjoy. Usually the animal doesn't like to be approached, especially, you know, in front. Another aspect as well that when we move the cows from a regular environment to a new environment for increasing opportunity of movement is actually place the animal in different condition, different type of stimulation. And it means that we also see an improvement in the animal reactivity. So what does that mean? That means that the animal is more calm when something happened in the barn, more sudden event, she's more calm. So all of that give us cues that changing the environment of the animal, providing with new opportunity of movement, means that the actually animal see an overall improvement of our experience, okay, and hopefully of our quality of life. So that's the type of question that we'll continue to look in the future to really try to understand what is actually the experience of the cows in, you know, in the new type of management. I want to mention that there's actually a quite important caveat that we found in the ways that cows are handled and that can have a really big impact on the our ability to easy handle the animal. To make sure that the animal actually has a positive of experience, they need and they can easy to handle, you need to give the time to the cow and the human that manipulate the cows to learn the whole process. It seems pretty easy, you know, when we discussed in, you know, about having regular outdoor access, for example, for cows or releasing the cows on regular access, you think that you just remove the tight rail and then you hope that the animal, the chain, and you hope the animal will walk. But the reality is like there are all new routine to learn. The habituation period is important. Everybody needs to take their time. Farmer needs to take their time to learn how to manipulate those animals. And there's a big step-by-step approach that needs to be done. Why? Because what we've seen is basically if you force or if you try to hold the cow back in the old process, it's not a win solution. What we found in the long term, the animal is pretty confused. So what do you mean? You release me and you want me to go somewhere and at the same time you don't want me to go there and run, for example. Well, it's simply that will lead the cows to become much more harder to handle. So really it's important to respect their pace and their learning and to make sure that the experience is positive, because if the animal are more difficult to manipulate, of course, it become a headache for the farmer and there's a full negative loop that is coming. So it could be a very positive experience for everybody, but we need to make sure that we take the time to implement that in different type of systems and with different type of structure.
That helps to unpack the benefits at a couple of levels too, which I think is really important, right? Not just the individual animal, but as you say, the producer and understanding the dynamics and the interplay between both animal and farmer here, or handler more broadly. I'll ask this question a bit tongue in cheek, because I know it's always, the answer is always no. Do we know all that we need to know here? You've already alluded to some of the areas we need to go, but what are some of those key questions? What do we need to explore further? What are your research teams up to try and better understand, you know, either additional benefits or how we achieve consistently some of those benefits across a variety of different facilities, for example?
So, you know, Steve, that if you have a question to a researcher, if there's more research to be done, I don't think any researcher will say no. We don't have, no, there's actually a lot that needs to be done. And I think that's important. We continue the research because if we want to help developing specific recommendations, there's more elements that need to be developed for all type of system, not just about the TISO system, but also the Freestyle system. What we really learn in the last few years of research is like increasing opportunity of movement is not just a matter of increasing the daily steps. Okay, it's really a question of increasing different type of movement that the cows can do when she's in another environment. We talk about social aspect, we talk about jumping, we talk about resting posture. There's plenty of different things. So movement opportunity is not just like we make the animal exercise, it's actually a full new experience for the cow and for the farmer. And in order to refine recommendation and application on farm, there's more research needed to be done. So some of the questions that we are tackling right now is, first, how do we manage the outing? How do we do it in a small herd? How we do it in a large herd, for example? Do we need to exercise every day? What is the impact of the frequency of providing outdoor access? Is actually convenience to do it once a week? Does the animal learn through the process? So that's the type of question that we're working right now. We try as well to understand if the objective is to provide a specific space for increasing opportunity of movement, does that work by itself? So basically, you're providing the yard. Is that enough? Do we need to actually provide some type of enrichment to make the experience more all for the cow and to have other type of benefits? And another important one that we tackle quite a bit when we talk about caveat is the handling aspects. How do we manipulate the animal? What type of social groups do we need to do? Can we actually mix and remix, the groups? All of the current questions that need actually answer to be able to develop and refine recommendations.
Great. So several questions we can pursue, and I think those are very important and applied, which I think is great. They really do go beyond just, hey, this is important. Hey, there are some benefits or some challenges with offering it. It looks to solutions. Often when we have these conversations that involve more than one perspective, we have today farmers, we have staff, and we have processor perspectives as well. Peter, maybe right away we can jump to you as a farmer. You know, if you wear just that hat for a moment, talk to me about your thoughts and maybe your personal experiences as it relates to this topic, and maybe some of the scientific results, some of the benefits that Elsa has just outlined. How does that sort of jive or align with your experiences?
Yeah, I think coming back to that comment, I think farming has always been a continuous improvement process. I don't know of many farmers who still handle or do things they did 10, 20, or 30 years ago. I think farmers have improved cow comfort and well-being over the years. Much knowledge has come up, research has come up. How we do things has changed pretty drastically, I'd say. At our farm, we've always adopted or been very early adapters of new ways of doing things. So I think we've improved whatever we could quite often. It has helped us really progress our herd health-wise also. So I think well-designed facilities improve cow handling and movement between groups. I think Elsa has mentioned that before. It reduces stress and health issues. So when well applied and well done, it's beneficial for the herd. It's beneficial for the cows. So it makes a much more pleasant work environment for both animals and the farmer.
Yeah, that's great. You know, as a representative of farmers at some of the other hats you wear, some of the committees within Quebec and nationally, you certainly will advocate on behalf of farmers, have conversations, listen to some recommendations and advise accordingly. No doubt there will be, we think about a population of farmers across Canada that are now going to, as ProAction implements the code requirements, they're going to have to adapt. And so you talk about the importance of adapting. What do you feel producers are going to need in order to successfully adapt here? Are there specific things that, that they're going to need in terms of when guidelines are going to be implemented or when requirements are going to be imposed, things like that?
Well, I think what producers will need is support. Some have a little more easy access to information to know exactly how to do improvements. So I think support is always, when you bring forward reasonable solutions, then an issue is always easier to handle for that part. But I think it's we have to incorporate the research and knowledge to be sure that we take the right direction. Like you mentioned, for sure, yeah, I mean, changing, adapt, and adapting is part of life, but it has its challenges. For on-farm issues, I mean, there are financial issues, time restrictions, labor shortages, there are government regulations, and also actual infrastructure and limitations for every farm as a different setup. So there are quite a bit of restrictions, but I think it's motivating though when you can improve your system and you move forward. It's always taking that first step towards the improvement can sometimes be difficult, but once you get going that you can, I mean, it's been our goal always to provide excellent care for our cows so that we can produce high-quality milk for Canadian consumers.
Olivier, as you listen in, I'm curious on your perspectives here. How does some of the science that ELSA's unpacked and the new requirements that have been baked into the code and some of those other recommendations perhaps, how do they sit with you from a processor perspective? Does this contribute to either ongoing conversations, expectations, or even just relations with your customers and ultimately consumers?
As I said previously, it's clearly a move in the right direction. I think it's going to be well received by most. And in the case of our customers, and that could be retailers, restaurants, or even further processors, most of them are fairly sophisticated and they have positions on these things and they're more and more interested in such topics. And they tend to be well aware that there are resource implications, you know, when you want to change a practice at the farm level and it changes the weekly routine of the farm or it touches on things like building design and retrofits, they know that it's not going to happen overnight. And what they want to see, though, is that industry is engaged in a continuous improvement process and is making serious efforts to evolve as society's expectations change and new science is being published.
Great. So it really sounds like this is going to be seen as a positive step. It sounds like it is for you and is going to be for the broader supply chain as well.
Definitely. And there's another great effect of what we're discussing today. And although it's not the primary target of all of it, it's also a very nice indirect benefit. And it's related to GHG emissions or methane emissions. You know, if we have better comfort and better opportunity for exercise, that can result in overall lower lameness scores and better hoof health, which then will translate in better longevity for the cows. So just imagine what the industry could achieve if we add two more lactations per cow. That would significantly reduce our carbon footprint.
What you've mentioned and what Elsa has brought up and Peter and Clem, all of you have touched on elements that make me think of the sort of the triple bottom line thinking, right? Not just profitability, but social responsibility and environmental sustainability. Some of the key elements of most, you know, national organizations, at least somewhere baked into their mission. And it certainly seems like we're headed towards being able to address some of those things more broadly here. Clem, if I think about where you sit and your perspective, wearer of many hats as well. But as I think about the DFC staff perspective here, I wonder if you can speak as or for the Dairy Farmers of Canada. If you think about what the revised code and what and how ProAction will evolve to address some of those items, how does that support customer and consumer conversations as well, or from a marketing angle, or telling the story about what dairy farmers are doing today and where we're going? Does this really contribute to some of that ongoing, some of those ongoing expectations and the questions that are being asked? Is this already baked into the story and what we're telling the rest of the supply chain about what dairy farmers are doing, or how does this contribute?
Ooh, that's a good question, Steve. Thanks. So DFC is kind of in an interesting position where we tend to be the intermediary between farmers and consumers and in contact, close contact with processors and have some connections with retailers. And so we do kind of wear many hats and have to take everybody's perspectives and needs in mind. What's been really interesting is with the ProAction program, the fact that we have all modules launched now, including an environment module, and that we focus on continuous improvement, we've been able to actually start now using those pieces to support the Blue Cow logo and our marketing initiatives. So listeners, if you're dairy farmers, or even if you watch TV or listen to the radio, you may have heard recent marketing campaigns from DFC that really focus on what farmers are doing on farm relative to animal welfare or net zero or environmental sustainability. And that really comes down to the fact that we have programs in place that we know farmers are following, and we can show ad agencies that, yes, we have proof that these things are happening. This is our program. These are the requirements of that program. And so from that perspective, supporting the Blue Cow, putting that out there to consumers, really supporting the message of quality milk and healthy, comfortable, high welfare standard cows, it's really been great. On the flip side, for farmers, what's really nice about this program is that both for ProAction and the code, it's very outcome-based, which means it tries its best to be very non-prescriptive. As long as you can reach the outcomes, farmers can find very creative ways of meeting those outcomes. So, for example, freedom of movement. This isn't a battle between tie stalls and free stalls or anything like that. There can be optimal management in all kinds of systems. But we found that based on the research, there are positive outcomes for the cows if freedom of movement is provided in some capacity. And so at DFC, we're really trying to support and leverage government funds to support research that tells us how to do that, what the outcomes look like, what are the best outcomes with what kinds of models, and then implement that into ProAction and make sure that those requirements are achievable, that we outline the outcomes, and then leave farmers to determine kind of how to do so. So it's really win-win-win across the board. In Canada, we have a very unique system, of course, with our supply managed system. And it allows us to develop this kind of a system where everybody's very closely linked and everybody's needs are met as best as they can be. And we produce great quality food. So that's what I'll say about that. And I'm sure that there are others that have their own perspectives.
No, that's great, because you bleed into where I wanted to go, which was we've talked about the what, we've talked about the why, and then you get into the how, right? And that's going to be pretty darn important for our listeners, but of course for a very diverse group of farmers from coast to coast, not just in their own dynamics on the farm, but the type, the facilities and their own constraints, as Peter somewhat outlined as well. Peter, either from a farmer perspective or from where you sit on various boards, any comments on the how piece in terms of how our farmers are going to adapt here to offer and meet the new requirements around a freedom of movement?
Yes. Yeah. So for the how piece, I think Clem kind of mentioned quite a few, but the animal care technical committee, if you really want to go through the specifics for ProAction, will define what adequate and sufficient opportunity of movement is. And I think we'll try to keep it as simple as possible for farmers, just clear expectations, timeframes, and validation methods to verify that the standards are respected. So, but as has been mentioned, yeah, ProAction supports the Blue Cow, which supports high Canadian quality standards for milk. So the process will be within ProAction, which all farmers kind of know already. And we'll try to make it as easy as possible. Although we have to respect many standards and national certifications, which is also part of ProAction, but we'll try to make it as easy to understand. Whenever it's easy to do, people are more inclined to follow.
I think you've nicely outlined sort of, there's a couple of important, I need a better metaphor than sausage links, but it makes me think of, you know, when you go to making the sausage, right? We've created the code. That is a big process that requires a lot of thinking and a lot of deliberation to develop what our recommendations and requirements. Clem and yourself now have outlined, okay, now we need to take that as an industry and figure out how we're going to actually pragmatically and practically implement that or outline what expectations are, so that farmers can do that. And then of course becomes the actual adaptation or adoption on farm across the country. So it's a process, it sounds like, and it sounds like one that from Olivier, from all of you, you've discussed, that is also one that's clearly has a rationale and has some benefits to not just to the individual animal, not just to the industry, but as a whole. Peter?
Yes, maybe just an easier way of saying instead of the sausage link, but it's a funny one. Yeah, I think as dairy farmers, I think we are the first link in providing excellent care for our cows and producing high quality milk. So we're part of an industry. We have processors afterwards. We have retailers. We have consumers. So I think we're part of a whole system, and we want to be a part of it and do our share of what's needed to keep the system healthy.
Thanks, Peter. I think that's a nice final thought there. And what I would like to do is maybe just go through our other speakers and see if you have any final thoughts here for our listeners who may be farmers, maybe other members of the supply chain, or those interested in what we have to talk about here today. Any final thoughts or just key take-home messages you'd like to share?
I think this industry has a bright future ahead. You said it, Stephen. It's a process. And quite a unique process when it comes to the code development here in Canada around NFAC. I'm not aware of something similar and that extensive in other countries. When it comes to proaction, from my perspective, certainly there are places for improvement, but the process overall is fairly good. And that's why we have the Blue Cow logo on approximately 650 of our SKUs at the moment.
I think I will reinforce one of the points that Olivier just made. The code development is a very long process, but very special in Canada. Very Canadian in the process that you actually need to have a consensus. I think there's nowhere in the world where people sit for 3 years to come to a consensus about what is an acceptable practice and how do we move forward. It's not just the questions of the farmers and the processors and the veterinarian and the researcher to sit together. It's everybody that is involved and want to be part of it. We have the human society, for example, that come. We have the farmer that come. Everybody come with their emotions. So it's a very emotional process as well. It's that's how today we have a code where on top of it we have a public consultations where everybody that was not maybe present at the table can have a chance to make comments, and we had to address those comments. So when today people tell me, well, we increasing opportunity of movement, freedom of movement is important in the new code, it's true, but we spend a lot of time to discuss about Are we ready to have that type of requirement in the code? And no, kudos to the group that will work, but how do we make it happen? And how do we translate our requirement into a practical recommendation? And the researcher will be there to help in the process.
I think based on what I've heard today, I'm very excited for the next couple of years and the research that's coming out, and some of that research will be published to see those results and really use that for farmers and also for everybody along the supply chain. But I think final thoughts are, it's pretty clear that everybody's aligned that we want the best for our cows and we want the best for our consumers in terms of the products we're offering and delivering to them. So this is one topic that we focused on, but I want to reassure everyone that all topics that are discussed at this level based on science, and we really dig in. Maybe this is a shameless plug here, but we do have other episodes in our podcast series that focus on other aspects, things like lameness and things like housing and handling, some things we touched on today. So I really strongly urge all listeners, if this was an interesting podcast for you, to go check out those other podcasts, the other episodes in our series, because it all comes together. And there's a lot of work being done and a lot of people working really hard. And at the end of the day, we just want to do best for everyone.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground here, and no doubt there will be more conversations to be had across the country in regards to this. And as you say, Clem, many other topics and many other opportunities as we move forward. I want to thank you all for taking the time to chat with me today, for your time, effort, and commitment to animal care more broadly. I think it's important work that each of you are doing. And as a supply chain, as an industry, no one section can do it without the others. And so again, thank you for your effort. Thanks for your hard work. And thank you to all our farmers and our stakeholders and partners listening as well. It's a pleasure chatting with all of you, and we look forward to doing it again.
Thanks, Steve. And thanks to Lactalis for supporting us and bringing this podcast to everyone. It's been a really fun partnership.
Thanks for listening to the Dairy Farmer of Canada's podcast series, Paths on Farm Excellence. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. This podcast was narrated by myself, Stephen Roach, edited and produced by Carly Wright. Thank you to our guests and to you for listening. This podcast was collaboratively developed with funding provided by the Dairy Farmers of Canada and Lactalis Canada.